You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to episode 53 of our show, where we discuss the latest news about Apple, iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and more. We're recording on Thursday, January 28th, 2016. Recording with us today are Shane Cole, and also on the line is Neil Hughes. The top story of the morning is that Apple is recalling some AC adapters and world travel kits in parts of South America, Europe, Asia, and Oceania. What's the recall for, Neil? What's failed here?
There's some AC adapters that apparently made with cheap Chinese parts or something, and it affects a pretty wide swath of them. We're talking about Mac and iOS devices that ship between 2003 and 2015. So there are a total of 12 incidents around the world where a two-pronged AC wall adapter broke and resulted in electrical shock when the user touched it. So people should definitely, if they live in the affected markets, check and make sure that they don't have an affected one. You can identify the affected one by checking inside of the adapter for the two-prong plug. And if it has numbers kind of written sideways in there, then you have an affected plug that you need replaced. If it has a box with EURs in Europe inside, then it should be okay.
Or there are other regions too. It's not just EUR. There's also AUS, whatever. But not only if you live in those places, if you just traveled there and happened to buy an adapter because you needed one on the spot.
Right.
So. Don't die.
So this isn't the power product itself. This is the little duck head adapter that has the wall prongs.
Right.
Okay. So check your wall adapters, check your little prongs, and make sure that you are not affected. If you are affected, what can you do? You can go ahead and visit apple.com support and find...
/support/AC-wall-plug-adapter.
For information on exchanging an adapter for a new redesigned model.
Yep.
So this is not the first power product that's ever had a recall. I remember years ago, one of the iPhone USB power supplies had a recall. And back then, the way that you identified it was there was a little green dot on the revised one.
Right.
What else has been recalled in recent past?
There have been occasional battery issues, stuff like that. I remember there was one with one of the iPod Nanos or something had a recall. And wasn't there one with one of the MacBooks with the screens or something?
Yeah, if we're not talking about just power recalls, yeah, there have been a few.
Right, there have been a few.
I mean, the last one was the third-gen Apple TV, if you were recalled, last year.
Yep.
There was the thing that I got hit with, the 2011 MacBook Pro graphics problems, where they just replaced the whole logic board eventually. That took forever.
That was, oh man, I'm even blanking which graphics chipset that was.
It was the NVIDIA model terrible.
Yeah.
And there was also a recall last year for the Beats Pill XL. I guess that there was a potential fire hazard with the battery on that. So
yeah, that one exploded or something. Yeah. Which was really good for everyone who bought it when it was on sale.
Right.
And because they got the full retail price back for it. So, well done if you bought a Beats Pill for like $100 and then got the full $350 MSRP back.
Yeah, very nice. Other big news this week was the first quarter earnings call for Apple. There were a lot of things that came out of this earnings call. Shane, do you remember some of them?
Well, I wasn't around, but I do remember some of them. Apple sold a lot of iPhones. Apple made a lot of money. The biggest quarter, $18 billion and change, the biggest quarterly profit for any company ever in the history of recorded company history. 77.8 million iPhones, which is still not the biggest selling single smartphone line in the world for some reason. And the first ever decline in iPhone sales. So there you go.
It's hard for people who aren't watching this stuff closely to try and reconcile that it was that huge a number, and yet this was also a decline. So what do you say to explain that to people?
Well, it's not a decline yet.
They forecast a decline.
They're forecasting a decline for their next quarter, the March quarter. They still grew. They sold 300,000 more iPhones this year than they did last year in the holiday quarter.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest problem is, look, everyone around the world who can afford an iPhone and wants an iPhone has an iPhone. So you either have to convince people to upgrade. You have to convince them to spend another $700 to upgrade their phone, which from the 6 to the 6S, it was not very convincing. Or you have to get people who are freshly into the middle class and can afford now to suddenly buy an iPhone when they couldn't before, because it's still an aspirational product, you know, regardless of where you look. Or you have to depend on people dumping Android, high-end Android devices. And I don't know exactly what the... I haven't seen any data that breaks down Android switching by device, I guess, level, you know, high-end versus mid versus low-end. But I suspect that if you're buying like a Galaxy S5 for full unsubsidized price, you're probably happy with Android in your Galaxy S5. You know, it's the Android switchers, I suspect, are mostly coming from the low end of the market. And there's only so many of them that you can switch.
Right, a lower end or maybe perhaps an older Samsung device, right?
Yeah, like if they bought a Galaxy S3 or something 3 years ago and they decided now it's time to upgrade, they may consider an iPhone. But I don't think anybody's just going to give up their S5 or their S6 and say, hey, I'm going to buy a new 6S because I can push the screen harder.
One of the interesting things was that Apple announced that they have 1 billion active devices out there. So you got to wonder, too, how many of those are like used ones purchased or hand-me-downs, old Macs, yeah, old iPhones, that kind of stuff. There's a huge market for resold Apple devices. And with 1 billion active devices out there, that's where Apple's kind of playing up this whole ecosystem and the money that they can make off that. That was a big emphasis for them on this quarter's earnings call, just kind of reminding investors that they have a lot going on outside of their hardware sales, even though hardware sales bring in the bulk of the money.
One of the things that I remember reading from the transcript of this was that people are still trying to get used to the iPhone upgrade plan, that it's sort of something they're still figuring out, and that 60% of people haven't upgraded their iPhone to a 6 or a 6S model.
I don't know if it's just the iPhone upgrade plan itself, or people, especially in the US, are getting used to the idea of not having a device subsidy. Like, that's the bigger problem. Because when you pay $100 or $199 up front for your phone, your bill doesn't come itemized with you paid another $40 this month for your phone. You know, you just say, I paid $199 for this, my plan will be X per month, and that's that. But now that subsidies are gone, there is a line item for that, and people are beginning to look at that and say, do I really need to spend $40 a month on a phone? Yeah. I think there's a lot of, they love using the word headwinds, so I'm going to use it again. There's a lot of headwinds there of convincing people that this is actually a worthwhile expenditure.
Do you think when the iPhone 7 rolls around that people's devices they've been carrying on will have been old and long in tooth now and make the upgrade at that point?
I mean, it depends how compelling the iPhone 7 is. You know, I mean, if it's the 6 to 6S, then I don't know, because there's not a whole lot that's compelling about it. The other thing you have to look at is, if you think of mobile phones as mobile phones, then it's difficult to get a clear picture of the upgrade path. But if you think of mobile phones as tiny PCs, right, it's what we've been saying about the Mac for a long time. It's good enough where it is for a lot of people. Like, you and I had the conversation the other day about why the Mac Mini shouldn't get an update, because the people who are going to buy it are happy with what it is for now. And I think you're going to see the same thing as smartphones get higher and higher end. There's going to have to be the bar for compelling someone to spend $1,000 on a new phone is going to continue to be higher and higher and higher. So the only way to sustain growth is either to expand the number of people who can buy your phones, either by going lower in price or waiting for more people to get rich, or to come up with some kind of hardware thing that says, hey, this is something you have to have. You know, and if it's just 2 cameras in the iPhone 7, then I don't know if that's going to be it.
Well, if you're coming from an iPhone 5, right, or you're coming from a 4S, then it's probably compelling. If you're coming from a 6, it may not be.
Well, it's a no-brainer from a 6 or a 6S if you're only paying $100 and you don't have that line item on your bill. Yeah, that's the key. You have to get over the psychological hurdle. you know, because people are anchored at one price point. And when you go significantly above that price point, it becomes a game of, well, why should I spend this money?
You break expectations and you break the threshold.
We've gotten into an accelerated society, global society of people wanting shiny new things, and they like things that look different. And I think a big part of this is the 6S has a lot of great upgrades in it and performance improvements, but it looks the same, and so people aren't as excited. And let's not forget that that's a big part of it. As stupid as that may be, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got to wonder if Apple going forward is seeing the performance of the 6S and saying, hey, we got a really great phone here, and it's not selling quite as much as we'd like it to. Maybe we should, you know, stop this like TikTok design thing and just tweak the design a little bit for the S year or something to give it something to stand out a little more. I wonder if that would juice sales, you know. I mean, that's a dangerous path to go down. You're turning into Detroit just putting a spoiler on something. But, right. I don't necessarily think it's a great idea, but you have to think those kind of discussions are happening at Cupertino just because they're going to see the first ever decline in iPhone sales, and the 6S is a great phone.
I don't know how true this is, but I've heard it said by a few people that the reason that the TikTok exists is to give the hardware engineering team a cycle where they know what the platform is going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So they know which benchmarks they have to hit, and that lets them push the envelope a little further. Because when you're developing both at the same time, you don't know how big the phone is going to be or what you're going to have, what kind of envelope you're going to have to play with.
Right.
Then there are trade-offs that have to be made. So giving them an extra year.
Are you just talking about like physical dimensions, or are you thinking about...
I'm talking about the internals.
Okay.
So you keep the physical dimensions as similar as the physical design as similar as possible, so that the internal engineering team has 2 years in which to perfect that, that iteration. Yeah. Rather than having to deal with the more slow pace of a brand new industrial design, because there are trade-offs that had to be made.
So what do you think about this breaking out services where they've really started to document the size and scope and growth of their services that they provide?
I mean, it doesn't change the fact that most of the money that Apple makes comes from one product, the iPhone. I mean, it's cool that they're highlighting the services, and certainly it's a huge business that any other company on the planet would like to have, but it doesn't change the fact that this is an iPhone company. iPad sales are down 25% year over year last quarter. The iPhone up a little bit. The Mac was down, and revenue was up because the iPhone was up, and the average selling price of an iPhone went up by like $3 or $4 as well. So as the iPhone goes, so goes Apple. And they're going to see a revenue decline next quarter because they're projecting the first ever year-over-year iPhone unit decline. That's just the way it is. And so, yeah, they're a services company. Yeah, they've got a new Apple TV out. Yeah, they are expanding to new markets like the Apple Watch. But, I mean, the iPhone is so freaking huge that nothing else is going to move the needle as much as it's going to depend on the iPhone. That's really what it's all about.
Well, you said a second ago, they made a big deal of there being 1 billion active devices, right?
Right.
That combined with breaking out services, combined with for the first time ever, I think, putting in their earnings statement the earnings on a constant currency basis,
right,
is painting a picture and saying, look, we are selling a crap load of iPhones, but it's going to be slow, and it's going to be slow down because, like we said, all the people who have iPhones or who want iPhones have iPhones.
Right.
But we have this whole ecosystem built around it, you know. So in the short, there might be some short term pain, but in the long term, we're going to be fine.
Yeah,
you know, that's the picture they're trying to paint.
Yeah,
right
the
now.
Narrative that they're selling is that you know, they can't say it because they don't project beyond the next quarter, but they're implying very heavily that they expect the iPhone to return to growth, either with the launch of an iPhone 7 later this year, or maybe get goosed a little bit by a 4-inch iPhone coming out in the next couple months, or just when global economies improve. You know, you have a lot of problems going on in China. Sales declined year over year in North America. So, you know, Apple is dealing with a few factors, including a saturation point of where everybody that wants an iPhone has an iPhone in established markets, but there's also a lot of potential in emerging markets like China, where they still managed to grow something like 15% last quarter. It's not quite the same 100% year-over-year growth, but how long can you sustain those numbers, you know? And there's a lot of potential in what they call the BRIC countries. Brazil and in India in particular have been highlighted by Tim Cook as places where they see room for growth. Apple might have to introduce some new products at new price points, like the new 4-inch iPhone, see where that gets priced, to address those markets. Certainly, they've done a good job, obviously, in China. You know, the conventional wisdom is that the gold and rose gold iPhone and watch models were made mostly for China because that's kind of culturally appealing there. So I think as Apple starts to focus on those areas as well, and they already have a locked in group of people that are going to upgrade to new iPhones, I mean, the company's going to be fine. It's not, there's going to be a lot of talk about doom and gloom because it's the first time ever, but it was inevitable. It had to happen.
Yeah. Somebody wrote into us, into our tips box this morning. And I'm sorry, Eric, I wrote a reply to you, but I wrote it sarcastically and only sent it to our employees. But he was asking, so what about this? Why was the reaction by Wall Street to this so ridiculous, right? It's the biggest quarterly profit by any company in history. And they had this massive stock buyback and dividend program. Why are people being like this? And the easy, short answer to this is there are two classes of investors. There are retail investors, and then there are institutional investors, right? Retail investors want a really short-term, by and large, they want a short-term profit, right? They want to buy in at $100 today and cash out at $200 in a year. Yeah, institutional investors, I mean, and you can think of people like Warren Buffett as an institutional investor. They want to hold a stock for 20, 30, 40 years. And what they care about is consistency over the long term. And as Apple matures, and especially as the iPhone, well, I guess Apple's already mature, it's 40 years old now, but as the iPhone matures, the types of investors that are in the stock are going to change. And the ones who are getting out are the retail investors and are also the loud ones. You know, they're the ones making the noise and saying, we don't want the stock anymore, because they're investing based primarily on potential for hypergrowth, which doesn't exist with the iPhone anymore. So as that shift happens, there will be some people that are being loud and saying this is crap and it's terrible and it's going to end. But in reality, everything will be fine. Warren Buffett will buy, in 2 years, he'll buy half of Apple and he'll hold it for the next 40. So it'll be okay.
What about this virtual reality comment, right? There was this...
Gene Munster, analyst with Piper Jaffray, who asked him about it because... he's convinced that that's Apple's next.
Well, he famously wanted an Apple television set, and he's not getting it.
I was just going to say, so, is VR and Gene's new Apple TV?
Well, the fact that Tim Cook said that he thinks that VR is cool and not a niche, I mean, he could say that about anything, you know? If someone asked him, what do you think about cars? You think cars are a niche? I mean, you
know, cars are cool, man.
Yeah, people.
What do you think about residential nuclear power, Mr. Cook?
You know, ask them about solar. They're not getting in the solar business, but they have plenty of solar power. So I could see, you know, products. They're certainly already out there, Google Cardboard-based stuff that turn your iPhone into a low-cost virtual reality set. I could see accessories similar to what Samsung's doing with their Gear VR, which works with some of their phone models. So, yeah, I mean, sure. Apple stands to benefit from VR in some ways, but I can't see them specifically making a virtual reality product. It doesn't.
Wait, but didn't they purchase Mateo and some of the other VR companies out there? They've got some investment in technologies, right?
Right, but you have to think about ways that you could use that kind of stuff. They also own whoever made Kinect, Microsoft Xbox Kinect, the first generation one, PrimeSense. There's a lot of stuff in there where virtual and augmented reality can be applied in ways that are not what we're talking about when we talk about Oculus Rift and stuff like that. Great examples would be augmented reality apps on your iPhone that use the camera and stuff like that. Apple's looking, for example, on getting into the indoor GPS mapping business, where you could go to the mall and it would have a map of the mall and tell you your exact location there in places where you can't get a traditional GPS signal. Those are extensions of virtual and more so augmented reality. And some of the companies that Apple acquired could do things like that. Like, for example, sensing distance is a big part of that. And that would be where PrimeSense and their Kinect might come in terms of sensing motion and all that. You look at devices like the Apple Watch and you think about some of the technology in there. It tracks your movement. It knows when you're looking at it and the screen automatically turns on. Take those kinds of features and start to think about how they could apply to future iPhones and iPads and Macs and stuff like that. Something like Leap Motion. There's a lot of different ways of interacting with devices that I'm sure Apple is experimenting with. And I'm sure in their Skunkworks lab, they've probably built some really cool VR headset or something, but that's not a product that's going to come to market. I can't see Apple interested in getting in that segment of the market. The benefits for them there would be basically none. You know, VR has a few applications that are pretty cool, and I expect that they're going to grow over time, but it's not as much of a broad mass market product as Apple would be interested in selling.
Not to mention that right now, to do really great VR takes a lot of computing horsepower.
Right.
And that's not going to change for the next 5 or 7 years. So even if there is eventually an Apple VR headset, which I think would be hilarious, it's not going to be anytime in the near future.
I have Google Cardboard and I tested out a bunch of apps and wrote an article earlier this year, and we can put it in the show notes. I mean, it's cool. I found it to be pretty neat. The quality is not great, as you would expect.
Is the quality not great just because you're looking at the screen that close and can see the pixels?
Or? Yeah, I mean, they've got Google Cardboard has these like special lenses that blow up each side of the phone to make it bigger, so it takes up a larger field of view. But you can still see the individual pixels even with a Retina display on an iPhone 6S. And it's also laggy. Just the processing power required and the movement with gyroscopes and stuff like that. That's one of the biggest things that companies like Oculus have had to overcome in developing theirs, is making it as low latency as possible. Because when there's a disconnect between your head moving and what your eyes are seeing, your brain just cannot handle it and it'll give you a headache. So the whole point of Google Cardboard really is a low cost way for developers and enthusiasts to kind of dabble in it and mess around with it. But it's not meant to be a final shipping product for the average person. You'll be sick in 2 minutes from using Google Cardboard.
Right. And what I was talking with some companies that are doing VR a week and a half ago, and what they were telling me is that it's not the lag that's the problem, that mostly that's overcome on some things. Some apps are terrible at it, but mostly it's good. The problem is that the lenses are so small, and that you lose peripheral vision, and because you lose the peripheral vision, that's what's causing the headaches and the motion sickness.
Yeah, certainly. I think that there's a lot of factors at play when you're going with a cheap VR knockoff. It's, you know, something like Oculus is where the market is going to start to make real inroads with people. But even that is going to apply to specific use case scenarios like gamers or, you know, I could see retail or, you know, some sort of environments like that where VR would be a hit. But for mom and pop to buy a VR set and bring it home and plug in 6 USB ports to a high-powered computer, I mean, that's never going to happen.
That's crazy. But let's think about this a little differently. So right now I've got the two of you on the record as saying that VR is not a hobby and they're not going to make anything for it. No Apple
tomorrow.
Headset. Okay.
Yeah, not tomorrow. I mean,
they're not gonna get right into the hardware business. They're not gonna make a VR headset.
Okay. So, you know, what if you had, and this is skipping ahead a little bit, but what if you had a phone that had a couple of cameras on it, for example, and you could take your pictures and movies in stereo and then be able to send them to someone who could pop in their cheap VR headset and then see your movies, your family photos in VR? You know, we get away from this gaming application. There are a lot of other applications outside of it that get interesting.
Well, to film something in VR, you'd need a huge field of view of at least, you know.
I saw several VR cameras at CES. just saying.
Yeah, but those aren't going to be on a phone. Those are like 360-degree cameras, right?
Yeah, but you know, if you film just 180 and still view in stereo, you can see your...
You need like a fisheye lens, and you'd need it two cameras so you could get depth and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, sure, that's certainly possible. And that's why I say when Apple has acquired these VR companies, that's where their interest might be. You know, in camera technology, in augmented reality applications and stuff like that. But in terms of selling a headset that you can put on so you can travel to Mars or something, Apple's not going to do that. No, that's not. But it depends on how you're looking at virtual reality. When we're talking about virtual reality and we're talking about, you know, what Gene Munster is asking Tim Cook, the thought that everybody is having there is Apple is interested in making a headset. Apple's not interested
in making
a headset.
There's not going to be an Apple Rift.
No, but Apple is interested in how VR and AR can add to their ecosystem and make their products better. And so if your augmented reality is, you know, like I was saying, with maps or overlays or something like that, something that could make GPS or navigation more valuable, that's a form of augmented reality, and it doesn't require putting a thing up to your face.
Yeah, and I think that they'd spend some attention on how to make your family photos and family videos augmented, because that's another big thing.
Yeah, I mean,
if I could get some augmented reality showing me the way to the store that I want in the mall, that's all I'm asking for.
Right. There are a lot of great applications here that are beyond the scope of strapping something to your face. But what we're talking about is a broader definition of virtual and augmented reality. The problem is right now when people talk about it, it's a very specific application. So yes, Apple's bought some VR companies, but what they're going to do with it is going to be completely different. And there are all kinds of ways that they could apply this stuff, particularly when it comes to the use of cameras, taking photos, augmented reality, that sort of stuff. But they're not going to strap something to your face.
And like you said, don't discount that the actual purposes of some of these acquisitions may not be the face value of these acquisitions.
Right.
Right. It may be one specific piece of technology or one specific vertical of knowledge that they want and they could only get by acquiring the company or the people within the company. So.
Right. I mean, to transition here, there was a rumor that came out this week about a dual iPhone camera exclusive to this.
Yeah, I said I was skipping
Plus.
Ahead.
Well, but it's relevant here because you're looking at some of these companies that they've acquired, and you think of all the technology that went into Kinect and everything that PrimeSense has. All of their products that they were developing were based on multi-camera systems that could do things like sense motion, track distance, all that sort of stuff. So when you think about Apple having an advanced camera system in a new iPhone with multiple lenses, you now have the ability to combine all of those input methods to see the world in a completely different way that your phone can't currently see it. And part of it would just be taking better photos, but then there's other things that you could do too. So one of the rumors is that one of the lenses might have a zoom function on it, a physical zoom. That would be better than the current optical zoom capabilities, which basically are just blowing up the picture and giving
digital
you
digital zoom.
Yeah. Digital zoom. Thank
right,
you.
Right. So optical image stabilization on one with a wider field of view, and the other would be a telephoto lens.
Right. Now, the physics of that aren't going to be so great, so I question that. And maybe there's some magic they could do with combining pixels or something. I don't know. You can't make pixels where they're not there, but I'm also not a camera expert in terms of small form cameras. So I don't know how it would work, but certainly when you have multiple lenses, and this isn't the first time something like this has been done. I think HTC had a multi-lens camera as well.
It's also not the first time we've had this rumor. We had it come up in 2014 as well.
Yeah, and where there's smoke, there's fire. The fact that we've heard this a few times means it's probably in the works, whether or not it's coming out this year. And I would be upset. The rumor is that it's only going to be in the 7 Plus and not in the iPhone 7. I would be upset if that were the case because I...
Well, that tracks the 6 Plus announcement where the 6 Plus got the optical image stabilization.
Right, yeah. They only had hardware optical image stabilization in the 6S Plus, and I believe it was even enhanced in the 6S versus the 6. So the difference has gotten wider. And there's even a rumor that Only the 7 Plus this year will get 3 gigs of RAM, while the 7 will stay with 2 gigs of RAM. So it seems like Apple might be differentiating in a way, kind of like you can only get a dedicated graphics card on a 15-inch MacBook Pro versus a 13-inch. So I think that there's probably something to this rumor just because it's been around for so long. And this is based on a company that Apple acquired called Lynx, who specializes in these dual camera setups. But then again, remember PrimeSense and Mateo and some of these other acquisitions they've made that would also apply in terms of that. And again, we're talking face recognition, that kind of stuff. So one of the things that Johnny Ive said in an interview last year was that the fact that you have to press a button on your iPhone to turn the screen on seems kind of antiquated, and he was talking about how great it is with the Apple Watch that you just turn it towards your face and then it turns on. So there's been some applications in the past. Google has certainly done it where your phone will recognize your face and then automatically unlock and stuff like that. So you could think about stuff like that that could be possible with more advanced camera arrays and those sorts of things. And they might be done in ways that are a little more secure and a little more functional than they've been done in the past. So those are the kind of things that you need to think about when you look at the future of VR and AR and how it applies to Apple.
Right. Let's move on. Let's talk about Project Titan. So Project Titan is the car project. And last week we talked about how they'd lost their head, that the person running the department of it was out and had moved on to another organization. So what's going on this week?
When you said that, I thought you meant they'd lost their head, as in they had gone crazy.
Well, they probably have, but
either way would be fine. Yeah. No, so I guess the news this week is we have a we have a source. Yes, that's right.
This
we're
an exclusive
news organization with sources. We have a source who knows, for whatever reason, the source knows what's going on at Apple, and specifically on this project. And said source informed us that the whole team is in a hiring freeze. Johnny Ive went on vacation for the holidays, as people are wont to do. And when he came back, he looked at the whatever, I'm not going to call it a car because it's not a car.
He looked at the state of the project.
Yes, he looked at the Titan that they have in the basement and said, "I don't like this." And they stopped while they figure it out.
Did he look at the project, or did he just look at the amount of progress and the lack thereof that they'd made?
It's not clear. I think the idea is that he looked at where they were, the direction they were heading, and then said, "I don't like this." And because he is, for all intents and purposes, now running the product side of
Apple.
So
he took the paper and balled it up into a ball and threw it in the trash can and said, "Stop everything."
That's the word. There is something we didn't put in that piece that our source also said, which is that there's no direct line between Johnny Ive and the guy who left, but you can connect the dots between them pretty easily. So that's unconfirmed, though. So there's that.
I'm trying to figure out what you mean by that.
I mean, what our guy said is that while there is no direct line between Johnny's unhappy and this guy got fired,
okay,
it's easy to draw the lines between Johnny coming back, being unhappy, and this guy.
And this guy's departure. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else we should know about this rumor? About this report?
That's kind of the news. Other than that, this is a really boring episode of the podcast.
This was a really boring segment, at least. It comes back to, you know, your statement 2 weeks ago saying Apple's never going to actually make a car. And, you know, if Johnny's not happy with the direction, they probably never will. But if they were just making technology for cars that they were going to sell into BMW or Mercedes or whoever, then his being unhappy with the direction, you know, probably wouldn't be a hiring freeze and as catastrophic as all this sounds.
Well, that's a valid point.
You still think they're not making a car, or you think?
I fully respect what you're saying, but I still think they're not
making
a car.
Disagree completely. Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's move on. Apple iPad Air 3 rumor. So there's a rumor about that says that the next iPad Air 3 is going to have 4K resolution.
Nope.
No.
Do I have that wrong?
No, you're right.
No, we mean no, it's not going to happen.
It's a dumb rumor.
It's a dumb rumor. Okay.
Yeah.
And why do you say no? Why is it no?
Because the iPad Pro is their flagship model, and they're not going to put out a new model that's going to make it seem less in any way.
Right.
If anything, the iPad Air 3 will match specs of the iPad Pro, but they're not going to sell a $500 model that is
undercuts the Pro model.
Yeah, that would be stupid of them to do.
But what are they doing also, to counter this drop in year-on-year sales of iPads? Are they just going to presume that matching the specs of the Pro is going to keep it alive, or what?
Yeah, I mean, that's their best-selling model is the original size. So you got to think that, you know, the question becomes, how much of the Pro do we get in a smaller form factor? So do we get the 4 gigs of RAM? Do we get the smart connector? Do we get the pencil support?
The pencil? They better get the pencil. I'm being mad.
Split view?
Well, you already have that on...
You get that on the Airs, yeah. Okay.
With the A8X processor. So yeah, you'll have all that.
Okay.
The real issue now for the iPad for me, and I say this as somebody who's a huge proponent as the iPad as a true computing device, is on the software front. It's just the hardware is great and the software is just not there yet. And yeah, it's getting there, but it needs a lot of work. And in some ways, they need to kind of rethink how iOS operates on a tablet to give it those capabilities. Like, for example, if you want to do slide over, or you want to do split view and you want to open an app, there's just a list of recently used apps on there, and that's it. There's no way to customize it, organize it. No, it's kind of crazy.
You swipe over and then you scroll and find the thing you're looking for, and it's atrocious.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's every split view compatible app is the worst part, not just the recent ones.
Yeah, so, you know, things like that need some work. Obviously, multi-user support is something that they're going to introduce with 9.3 for schools, but, you know, for the household, that would be a nice feature. Input methods. We need better keyboards than we have right now with the smart connector. The two options available, neither of them are great.
You get Apple or you get Logitech. And of those two, Apple is the good one, right?
I've got both of them, and really neither of them are that great. The Logitech is better for using on your lap, but it's a case style, a folio style, so you have to have your iPad encased in hard plastic and you can't take it out, and I don't want to just have my iPad be a poor man's laptop for a while. Sometimes I like to just have it and use it as a tablet, so it's that versatility and that ability to easily connect it. Apple's addresses that, but the problem there is you can't use it on your lap because it's so flimsy.
All right, Shane?
If Microsoft and Apple could get together and Microsoft could convince Craig Federighi to put some variant of OS X on the iPad, mm-hmm, and then Craig Federighi could convince Microsoft to actually force developers to create tablet-optimized apps, you would have two really extraordinary tablet operating systems, right? Windows 10 is really great on a tablet. The applications on Windows 10 are not built. Even Microsoft's own tablet-optimized versions of Office really, really, really suck on a Surface.
How are they on iPad for you?
No, Office on iPad is great.
Okay.
But Office on Surface is trying to be desktop Office, and it totally fails.
Yeah.
And on the iPad, you need, especially on the iPad Pro, you need professional quality apps. The fact that I can't run Photoshop on my iPad is not Adobe's fault, right? It's Apple's fault for not enabling that level of professional application. The fact that I can't use my iPad as an AirSats Wacom Cintiq is a whole other thing that I don't even want to get into because it'll just make me mad. But that's what needs to happen. Microsoft needs better tablet app support, and Apple needs better pro... I don't want to call them professional user, but I'm going to professional app support. Especially the iPad Pro has to be closer to a laptop than it is to an iPad.
If this is, as they say, their vision of computing and the future of computing, then they need to darn well hurry up and get there.
Yeah, the future of computing is not me pushing a ball around on my screen with my finger. It's not.
the future of computing is your device is what you need at that moment in time. Sometimes you need a tablet. Sometimes you just need a phone. Sometimes you need a laptop. And if you have an iPad that can serve those roles of laptop and tablet as you need, that really is the future of that style of computing. Then it just becomes a question of how big of a screen do you want.
What didn't Schiller say, we think you should use the smallest device that you can use to accomplish that task?
Right.
Like, that's their idea.
Yeah.
You should use it. If you can get it done with an iPhone, you do that. If you can get it done with an iPad mini, you do that, et cetera.
On up until you need to use a Mac or something. And if you need it, that's fine. And I get it. You know, the iPad's never really going to truly replace the Mac. But for 90% of people, for 90% of their computing needs, the iPad can get the job done, even as it is now. It just needs to get better at it, more efficient. We need to make it easier to multitask and do things at once, and they're getting there. I know that Apple is really hanging on and doesn't want to add any form of cursor support, but for the instances where cursor support would be very helpful, like when you're, you know, editing text in a document or something like that, or...
Well, now, if you're using a keyboard, you have cursor support, don't you?
Well, I mean, like a trackpad or...
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. That's different than cursors.
What Neil means is when you're... So, I've been staunchly anti-iPad Pro because it's enormous, and I don't feel like I should have a tablet that's the size of my MacBook Pro to carry around. But I really want the Pencil because I want to be able to stop carrying a notebook and an iPad to meetings. So I have been using a friend of mine's iPad Pro when I can for a few days. And Neil is absolutely right that when you have the keyboard, when you have the keyboard and an iPad in that orientation, you expect a trackpad. You know, it's really awkward using the keyboard and then having to go point on the screen.
I mean, the OS doesn't even have proper support for the keyboard for basic stuff like scrolling with the keyboard. There's no need for you. We're talking about in terms of efficiency.
Yeah, it does.
It does not. We're talking about in terms of efficiency. We're talking about in terms of fatigue and things like that.
If you're typing and you have the keyboard and you want to go page up or page down, you can totally do it.
In a word processing document, yes.
Okay.
But if I open up, for example, Safari, or if I'm in a third-party app, I should be able to just
use... And page up and page down work for those, too.
Not,
and cursors work for those.
Not in every app and not in every instance.
You just named Safari.
Okay. So other apps.
So other apps are up to app developers understanding that they should use the keyboard. They have to add hooks for the keyboard in each one. It's not an OS-level thing.
Here's a great example.
That's an example of brain damage on Apple's part for not making the keyboard hooks an OS level thing. But
let's say I have a keyboard connected to my iPad and I want to access the multitasking view. There is a dedicated home button that is not on the iPad itself, that's on the keyboard. You can double press it and pull up the multitasking view. But then why can't I use the keyboard to scroll left and right through the open apps and select?
Why aren't you just using Command Tab and Command Tabbing to your different apps?
Well, you can do that too, but the point is the stuff doesn't work as it should. There should be more universal keyboard support.
I'm with you there.
The OS needs to improve, and I realize that they don't want to give us trackpad or mouse input, but it would make, when you're using it like a laptop, it would make the experience that much better. Reaching out to interact with the screen works sometimes, but in a lot of situations where you just want to get stuff done and you want to just precision, like even still with the iPhone 6S, one of my favorite features with 3D Touch is the ability to scroll the cursor on the screen by pressing harder on the on-screen keyboard, but it doesn't work that well. Like, I'll want to go to the end of a URL and modify it, and I'll press hard and then scroll to the right, and then it just stops scrolling. And then I'll let my thumb up, and then I'll press hard again, and then it doesn't work. And it's like dealing with a cursor on the screen in iOS is still a frustrating experience, you know, some 8 years after they introduced it or whatever we're at now when they added cut, copy, and paste. So it's something that needs to be fixed, and it's something that probably needs to have an optional hardware accessory to allow you to do it. The Pencil is a step in the right direction. Doing stuff with the Pencil is much better than using your finger for certain applications.
Do you ever have the problem where you try to use the 3D Touch press to move the cursor and it just won't let you do that in the first place?
Say that again.
So a lot of the time, if I'm somewhere and on my phone, if I'm trying to use the 3D Touch cursor move thing, it just won't. It won't let me do it.
Same thing. Yep.
I press as hard as humanly possible, and it just puts another L on the screen.
Yep. Sometimes it doesn't work, and then sometimes it'll work once and then won't work the second time.
Yeah. The other thing that's been pissing me off for seemingly ever since I can remember is that it's almost impossible to trigger a control center when you have a keyboard on the screen.
Yes, correct.
Like, it's that kind of stuff that just drives you mad about iOS.
Yep.
You know, like, they're trying to sell this. Yeah, especially with an iPad Pro, you're trying to sell this as a professional, a thing that a businessman can take on the road and use, right? But as a guy, as a businessman who lives basically on the road, I value dependability over almost anything else. You know, I just need my, it's why I use a Mac. I need my stuff to work.
Right.
And when it doesn't work, I need someone I can immediately blame to fix it, you know? And you don't have that on iOS. It just doesn't always work. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah. iOS 9 was a step in the right direction in terms of adding iPad specific functions, but there are so many little things that are broken that iOS 10 really needs to just fix those little things that
yeah.
I still have and I can't figure out how to fix it other than potentially, I guess, resetting my phone. There's still a bug that's existed since share sheets were introduced, the customizable share sheets, where copy and paste does not work properly. I will cut or copy something and go to another app to paste it, and then it pastes something that I had copied before. It doesn't remember my last copy.
Yeah, I get that on iOS 10.
Yeah, I mean, it happens to me. I don't get an iOS 10, but I get an iOS 9, and I've had it in iOS 8 and I think 7 too. I think it's been around for like 3 years now. It's like, how have we not fixed
it? Reset your phone already.
Yeah, right. It'd be a nightmare.
Well, so another one of what happened to me is I bought an iPhone 6S and backed up to iCloud and restored from iCloud. Everything was fine. I didn't drop my phone. My phone fell off my coffee table, a fall of 1 foot onto a carpet, but it fell at exactly the proper like angle that shattered my screen.
Oh, geez.
So I took my phone back, used my Apple Care Plus, got a new one. And when I restored from iCloud to the second one, all of my health data was gone. All of my call history was gone. All of my iMessage history was gone. And there's no way to get any of it back to get any of it working again without just going and starting from scratch as a new iPhone. Like in health, you know,
it should have loaded all this stuff back from iCloud from the encrypted side of it.
So here's the thing. It did, because I can see that I have 750 megabytes of health data
that you can't access.
I can't access it. Yeah, exactly.
God.
And the worst part is that, you know, if you don't have an Apple Watch or another activity monitor, your phone just uses itself.
Right. It's using the motion processor.
It doesn't even see itself as a source in health. I have no data sources.
Okay. So can we talk about iOS 9.3 beta?
So the second...
I can tell you that it doesn't fix my health problems.
Well, that's a personal problem.
Yeah. You're going to need a GP for that.
Yeah, I know.
The second betas for public testers and developers came out for iOS 9.3 and OS 10.11.4 this week. The Mac update, who cares? iOS 9.3, we've talked about it a few times here. It adds some new features, the night shift mode for making it easy on your eyes at night, stuff like that. Cool. I wrote a story today. I was reluctant to write it because... it's beta software, and there are bugs in beta software, and that happens. And it's not really a story that there's a bug in beta software. So what happened was when 9.3 came out a couple weeks ago, Mikey and I, who both have iPad Pros with Apple Pencils, realized that the way that the Apple Pencil works has changed drastically in iOS 9.3.
I was about to say, this feels like a Mikey story.
So I just assumed it was a bug because why would they introduce functionality with the Apple Pencil and have it work and then just yank it? Mikey had a bit of a conspiracy theory that Apple was doing this on purpose to kind of limit how you would use the pencil with your iPad Pro. Then iOS 9.3 Beta 2 came out this week and the issue still exists. So that was why I decided to write a story this week. Because it's actually still there and Apple hasn't fixed it. Now, we still don't know if it's a bug or if it's an upcoming change, but what's happened is if you're running 9.3 beta 1 or 2 and you have an Apple Pencil and an iPad Pro, you can no longer do basic navigation functions with the Pencil. So previously, the Pencil could be used to open an app, tap on an app, scroll in any app, type on the keyboard, that kind of stuff. Well, since 9.3 came out, you can no longer tap on an app on the home screen to open it with your pencil. You have to use your finger. You cannot scroll in Safari and things like that. You have to use your finger. And Apple has made some comments that they don't want this to be, the Apple Pencil be viewed as a stylus, because they see it as a markup tool and a drawing tool. And you can still do those functions in iOS 9.3 betas 1 and 2. You can draw and you can mark up and do stuff with PDFs and stuff like that, but you can no longer use it for basic navigation. And for me, someone who doesn't do a lot of marking up or drawing, I liked the navigation abilities of the Apple Pencil, and so I'm pretty disappointed with the betas thus far. But when the actual software ships, we'll see if that's a change that Apple's made or not. But for right now, if you're running the betas, you can't do it.
Let me ask a question. Was there a situation where you were trying to draw and it scrolled instead?
No.
Was there ever a situation where we're trying to scroll and we're drawing instead?
No.
So there was never any really confusion about this other than the emphasis that it seems like Apple's placing on the purpose of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, the apps generally have ways of dealing with this on their own anyhow. Like, I have PDF Expert, and I filled out a document when I got my iPad Pro. And you could have it in markup mode, or you could have it in navigation mode, and you just tap whichever cursor you wanted. Palm rejection works fine. Rest my hand on the screen, write what I needed to, and then take it out of the markup mode to do other stuff with the pencil. It worked fine.
I just want to say about the story that the comments that you got story highlight everything that is wrong with Apple apologists.
Yes.
And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in the comments who are like happy about this and think that it's a good thing that Apple is removing it. And, you know, okay.
I think my favorite is one guy was on your side and said, this would be really annoying to have to put down the pencil just to do something right. And then pick up again. And the next reply to him was, humans generally have two hands. Don't you have to use one of those hands to hold the iPad in the first place?
Well, the whole point is not having to move your hands, is trying to avoid moving your hands as much as possible, right? You keep your hands where the work is. So having to put something down or use the other hand is not in line with that.
Yeah. Well, not so if you have ever used an iPad Pro, and if you're a person who draws a lot, you'll notice that a lot of drawing apps have controls. They try to keep them on the left-hand side, right? Or at the very least along the left and right rails, because that's where your hands would be, you know, if you're trying to keep the iPad steady.
Right.
And what would really piss me off is if I'm trying to access a control on the right-hand side and I have to shift my hand around to hit it with one of my other fingers because I can't just hit it with the pencil. That would really make me mad. So if you are listening to this and you're one of the people who commented on Neil's story and thought he was losing his mind because he was upset, know that you are actually the one in the wrong.
To your listener, you are the problem.
Yes, exactly. I sent Neil when I was reading that. I saw somebody with a cross stitch that says never read the comments. I think I need to nail that to my monitor.
Well, on that note, this has been episode 53 of the Apple Insider podcast. Shane, where can people find you on the internet?
Not in the Apple Insider comments, I'll tell you that much.
And Neil Hughes, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm occasionally in the comments. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at This Is Neil. And you can read me on Apple Insider.
And I'm at VMarks on Twitter. And if the future of computing is Neil and Shane chasing the point of a laser pointer around the wall, we'll tell you all about it next week on Apple Insider Podcast.